And Rivers here at the Howe Arden Mall, high atop Sacramento, where Howe meets Arden. Once again, the smartest man in the world vodcast takes to the ether from the salubrious confines of Sacramento's premier comedy club, The Punchline, ladies and gentlemen. We thank them for hosting us here and their delicious sliders and every other kind of kindness that they've shown me since I've been in Sacramento. I just arrived today in time for the unbelievable, penetrating, palpitating, Gila monster-killing heat that you provide here. We flew over the green fields that feed all of California on our way here to Sacramento, the city of trees. And my goodness, it is. I was in Minneapolis not but a few days ago, and it was warm there. But Sacramento does a special kind of warm. I don't know what the air conditioning in my hotel room is based on, but it's like being told a secret by a lizard. That's the power and strength of the air conditioning in my room. It's like an inference from a beetle, you know, just... like, this could be a little stronger. I want Arctic fucking freeze. I want penguins keeling over, shivering. I want Arctic explorers crying and coming out of their tent and writing those last few fateful pages in their diary. I want caribou. I want ptarmigan. I want... none of it fucking fishing for seals through a hole in the ice near the table in my room. That's how cold I want it. It's bloody hot outside, like mercury toward the sun, fucking giant solar flare, probe, bake through my fucking skin, make me have a weed headache when I'm not smoking weed hot. And the air conditioning in the room is like the flapping of a mayfly's wings against, yeah, just... I didn't know there was a setting, because there only says auto and fan. There should be another setting in my room. Disappointing. Insufficient is the setting that it really is on, because it's not at all blowing the gale that I want here. The gale, exactly. The Arctic gale that I require, because I'm older now and I sweat at almost all times. I will sweat in the shower. I'll sweat any movement. You reach a certain age. I hurt myself like getting out of the bed and onto the floor yesterday, which I realize is a cliche, but it really happened. My right leg cramped, and I went, I didn't do anything. Shouldn't you be, like, you know, lifting another Greek man over a wall of feta cheese? Shouldn't you be hurling a giant stone attached to a chain or something in order to go, ah, that hurt? By the gods, I shall shake this off and once again prevail. And then put a jaguar hat on and fucking cut someone's knees open with an obsidian blade. You know how you're supposed to act. Instead, I'm like, I'm high. Ah! I think I've torn all the ligaments in my right medial collateral. I diagnosed on the way down. Ah, for the carefree days of halcyon youth. I haven't been to Sacramento in ages, and I always have a good time when I'm here. I think we were in Davis last year. I can't remember. I remember that I tweeted, hey, look out, Chico, we're coming tonight. And Dave Anthony, the comic who does the awesome podcast with Greg Barrett, Walking the Room, wrote, this is the saddest tweet of the week. He retweeted, look out, Chico. And I never stopped crying. I had to fucking... I DM'd him immediately. Fuck you. That was hilarious. You fucking... How did I say that? Yeah. If you want to be in show business, you'll notice that when Tom Cruise, who's just been filed for divorce against, he said, ungrammatically, sticking that in the middle of the sentence. Katie Holmes, the well-known Stepford wife, has finally... tripped over some mood elevators and went to New York while he was in Iceland. Who shoots movies in Iceland, by the way, besides Chilly Willy? I would have thought... Really, Iceland? What kind of movie are you shooting? One about a small fairy? Oh, see what I did? I wouldn't be judgmental if I lived here like you guys. Yeah, I'd be a little more acquiescent and yielding. I want you to open like a lotus and I'm a fucking hummingbird probing. Yeah, that's right. Submission, that's what I demand. You don't get to do, oh, that one was hack. Fuck you, hack. It's hot out. I can't work under these conditions. But it's nice and air-conditioned in here, Greg. Yeah, but I was outside a while ago. And the memory lingers on. I'd love to put this vodka down, but it's my only friend right now. You know, summer's here, and the 4th of July is going to come rolling up on us like an incredible fucking incandescent wave of patriotism, one that makes you look at America's history and forget the My Lai massacre and slavery and the predator drones that are shot around the world and go, fucking hats off to Johnny Freedom and shit. I got a hand job while I was watching the end of the Euro Cup final. This country's awesome. There's probably Mayberry on at some point, at any point every day, somewhere around this country. There's some fucking good things going on. That's when the 4th of July rolls out, and you want to do a barbecue. So you get on your barbecue clothes, and you've got the kiss me. Oh, yeah, we're swinging right into this first commercial. I don't pay to. You've gone to a. This is Sacramento, California, just to orient everyone out there in the world. There are stands in every parking lot here with fireworks in them. But they're California fireworks, which means they're safe and sane. Now, I know what you're saying to yourself out there in the world. What's the point of fireworks unless they're unsafe and wildly insane? Unless someone drunk is lighting them with a cigarette that's too short and they can't run away in the time that the fuse takes to ignite. And then something shoots off like a rocket into the sky and an enormous report is heard, except it didn't. It went sideways and it went under your fucking car. And now you're wondering whether a car can blow up from the force of a fucking rocket that you bought from a guy with intermittent teeth. We don't sell those here. We sell cones, and they go, and then all the, you know, the glitter comes flying out, and sometimes you change color. It's red, it's green, it's blue, and then, oh, it's disappointing, and now it smells weird. And then there's the Smokey Joe cabin. I'll get to that in a second. But the 4th of July is about many things. One of them is about grilling, my goodness shakes. And what you need if you're going to grill is a man grate. They weigh 8 pounds apiece. I don't know why this is salient, other than I want you to know that the man grate's not going to fall apart like some flimsy piece of non-American made foo-faw. It's going to hold together like the fucking brigade that took Iwo Jima Hill. They're made of cast iron. Like the Monitor and the Merrimack were when they met each other in that fateful battle in the Civil War some 150 years ago when freedom and the Union were preserved. Cast iron grilling grates simply lay atop your current standard wire grates and deliver steakhouse-quality flavor in your own backyard, much like flavor was delivered by Davy Crockett and the Tennessee Volunteers when they faced Santa Anna's enormous Mexican army that came to take the Alamo. For 13 days, they held out. No more dry meat. Boy, tell me about it. No more flare-ups. Oh, my God. That shit's on fire. With their patented design, every man grade order also comes with the world's best grill brush! Take advantage of their special $20 price by clicking on the man grade banner. It's on my site, gregproops.com. Where is it, Greg? It's down on the right. 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 There it is. It's the one with the flames on it. You get it for 20 clams, and you get the grill brush, too. They support the show. That's why we have them. The show's free to download, and when you're out there on the 4th of July, you're going to be wearing some shorts, and your significant other's going to walk in, and you're going to go, what are you wearing? And she's going to go, like, I've had a lot of rosé, and then the man grate will be forgotten. As Steely Dan said, now we dolly back, now we fade to black. And then the cone, right? My father used to go get a big box of fireworks, the safe and sane ones. I am from San Carlos, California. Land of the city of good living was our, that was the actual slogan. Someone came up with that in the 20s, some chamber of commerce. City of good living. A city of where it's okay most of the time. You'll find it oppressively white and want to leave when you're 18. That was the slogan I gave it in high school. And he used to buy a giant box, right? And there was one that was called Hobo Joe, was it? It was like a cutout of a what we would now call a homeless person. But somehow, hilariously, he was a hobo. Meaning, he had evidently ridden the rails. Let me make sure we're recording. Thank fuck. Fuck. Believe me, I've gone longer than this and not turned the fucker on. If it was only made of cast iron and lay atop my grill. Like Washington's boat crossing the Delaware on that fateful night into Trenton when they surprised the Hessians and gave America its first great victory in the war against tyranny. Oh, man great, you make America great. Jet flyover. My father would buy the giant box. Hobo Joe, was it? Smoky Joe? Hobo Joe. Does anyone remember this one? Am I the only person this old? And you'd put the... It was basically like a stogie, but it didn't blow up or nothing. And you put it in its mouth and lit it, and it just smoked. So eventually, yes, it just burf, burf, burf. And it was a stand-up thing, and you stood it up. And then eventually you'd grow bored and set it alight. And that was when... That was when the fun kicked in, when you just light Hobo Joe on fire and he would just brrr, and the thing would come down and the face would fall off and then it would be a horrible heap of shit with that horrible stogie thing still smoking. There was also one called the Burning Cabin or the Cabin on Fire or something. The same premise, terrible. We would go to Chinatown and get the ground bloom flowers. You know, the kind of, you light one end and it goes, it whirls, right? It's a tube and you light one end. There's an unbelievably fucking shoddy fuse stuck into the end of this fucking thing. There's no telling how long the fuse on a ground bloom flower is. Like, you can light it and sometimes it'll be like, and then, and it still doesn't go. And you go, I wonder if it's going to reach down. And the minute you reach down, that fucker goes, and just ignites like a fucker, right? And then they go red, green, blue, yellow, 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 and then poof, they stop, and then they conk, 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 because they're still spinning in a mad spiral. Those ones are good. If you throw them, of course, they're magnificent. But then when they go out, they don't spin. They just poof. I've already told this story once on the show. I went to 4th of July. My mother's birthday is 4th of July, and she's 285 years old. And she lives in East Texas, and I bought Texas fireworks, which are not safe and sane. They were at a trailer where a dog was chained, dying, and a family that looked like they were from a Faulkner novel and shit like that. They just finished some squirrel, and they fucking came up, and, you know, and I bought a plastic bag full of shit that ignited, that rockets, poof, that bam, and fucking, and he went, really? You just fucking sold this to me for like a dollar? This is more than a dollar's worth of gunpowder. And I say we bring that back. I remember one night in San Francisco, my wife and I had people over, and I had bought a big box. I drove down to Daly City because within the confines of San Francisco, safe and sane fireworks are not sold. Except their mistake is that they forget that Chinatown is accessible pretty much any hour of the day, and that every Chinese store has an inconceivable boodle of fucking fireworks that used to make Genghis Khan go, like, the history of Chinese fireworks is the history of fireworks. They fucking invented the game. Their fireworks are insanely awesome and wildly shoddy. Sometimes you open one up and all the gunpowder falls out while you've got your lit fucking cigar over it and you're drunk and shit. They're exciting fireworks. They're exciting. Yeah, Marco Polo watched the same fireworks that we watch. We're all taking part in the same continuity of fireworks from China. And Our yard was completely overgrown. We didn't own the house. We were renting from an insane person. And Harry Daitoku, who was hilarious. And I've done it before on the show, and I apologize in advance. He spoke in a pidgin Japanese accent. Hey, Greg, how's it going? Like that, right? That's how Harry spoke. So the backyard was completely overgrown with weeds. No one ever looked after it because he was busy, like, I think, doing coke and climbing off the walls or whatever the fuck it was he was doing. So I dug a pit where we were going to put the fireworks, and my wife goes, what the fuck are you doing? Like, I cleared an area, and I went, that's the safety pit. And she was like, our entire fucking backyard is dry grass 5.5 feet tall. There is no the safety pit is inside your cerebral cortex, where a peanut is whirling gently, making a humming noise. That's what's going on in your brain right now. So everyone came over, and I wetted down the grass with a hose. And then I said to my wife, I've got the hose standing by should anything occur. Our next door neighbor, Charlie Murphy, was half Irish, half Filipino, which he told us when we moved in. And, of course, I set a rocket off, and it shot immediately into his yard and set the roof of his fucking garage on fire. But with the kind of foresight I had employed, already the hose was waiting to be turned on. So Harry came outside, and he's like, hey, Greg, what's going on? I'm like, don't worry, Charlie, I've got a hose. And a safety pit area. Should your house burn down, you and your family are invited to live in my backyard in the safety pit, where surely you will find succor against the fucking vicissitudes of this night. May I have another vodka if there's any left at the... Thank you, my precious. Good answer. So I always enjoyed the 4th of July. A night that I think animals must think that humans are like the what's happening to us. We're all of a sudden we're drunk and wearing shorts and screaming at each other, and then shit's flying over and shit gets spilled and broken and children are crying and no one can wait till it gets dark, and then when it gets dark it's enormous explosions that rock their fucking world to the very core. If an explosion like that happened during a regular day, they know you'd be running around crying, but on that night you're like, come here, Taffy. Someone, I forgot we're in Northern California. Greg, it was a funny premise, but fictional dog's ears got hurt during it. That dog in your story wasn't enjoying that. That fictional dog got hurt in a made-up story. You fucking dick. That's not what freedom's about. The 4th of July is a... The 4th of July is a good one because we don't really, you know, have to do anything. Right? Like, Memorial Day went by the wayside. The honoring of the glorious dead and everyone who served, we kind of, hey, whatever, and then there's a flyby, and, like, you go to a ball game and shit. It's not as profound as it should be, right? I was in Sicily several years ago, and three... Italian troops died in Afghanistan, and it was on TV every day for 5 days, concluding with a giant state funeral for them where the prime minister wept. And I was like, huh. Not Berlusconi, not my favorite one, not Count Dracula. This was when Prodi was in for like 2 years or whatever. Berlusconi wouldn't have wept. He'd have been like, this, another chance for girls to be undressed near me. Yes, it's a sad occasion. You know, sadness requires a rejuvenation of life. No, and I thought, at the time, we really don't give it up quite enough at any point ever to acknowledge the kind of insane fucking sacrifice that we make people do. So then there's that holiday, and then there's Labor Day, which is a made-up holiday that we made up so that we wouldn't celebrate May Day like the rest of the world does, because that would be communist, and communists would be bad, and don't ask me to explain why it's bad. I think because the idea of sharing is such an American thing. Communists are forced to share, and we won't have that. I'll give you anything you want if you ask me, but don't fucking make me share shit with you. on a government issue basis. I already have to go to the DMV and share a room with people that have lizard heads and shit. In any case, there's that one. And then Christmas, but then Christmas comes with religion, and then some people don't even celebrate Christmas. And then if they, like, take the Christmas decorations down in front of a city hall or something, people come on TV and go, "There's a war on Christianity!" And you're like, no, everyone in the government's Christian, and 1,000,000% of the population's Christian, and we have to say in God we trust, and we fucking, no. If there was a war on Christianity, there'd be Christians hanging from fucking telephone poles all over Sacramento and shit. Put up by the pagans who fucking hate them. That's what oppressing Christianity is like. When every president of all 44 presidents is a Christian, Christianity's not in any danger of going away at any point. As I've said so many times, when you've heard about the healthcare thing and there's religious hospitals, well, some of the things are against our beliefs. As I've so often said, have your beliefs and then stay off my dick with your beliefs, and then we'll all fucking get along and believe what you want to believe. I believe I'll have another sip right now. In any case, the 4th of July frees us from all those things because we're never actually required to think about what the 4th of July means. First of all, Thomas Jefferson thought it would be the 2nd of July and actually wrote in his diary and shit, because they voted on the Declaration that day. They ratified it on the 4th. And ratify is such an unexciting word, and it's so procedural and parliamentary and shit. And how shall we vote on this? Aye, the ayes have it. That was that moment. It was hardly a moment where torches were branded in the air and people dressed like Indians and threw tea off a boat. It didn't quite have the same, or as, was it Sarah Palin said, Paul Revere was shooting them whistles and ringing them bells or whatever. Even though he did neither, quite frankly, he was arrested at gunpoint after a very short ride. In any case, we don't have to actually think about the boring process. What government is, which is a bunch of people sitting in a room. In those days, a bunch of white men sitting in a room. Now it's a bunch of white people sitting in a room with a couple of black people and a couple of women, and maybe a Latin or two, just to show that fucking there's room for everybody in this country, whether you're a billionaire or just extraordinarily wealthy. There's someone to represent you. It costs $1 billion to run for president now. The fun part of the 4th of July is that all that's fucking abrogated the minute you get up in the day. When you're little, all you can think about is when 9:15 comes, because that's when it's dark enough to set shit off. And then you're going to see Hobo Joe burn. And your parents are going to be a little tipsier than fucking usual. There's going to be a little more swearing than usual. There might be some side boob from an older lady. Around the pool, it's a very exciting time. There's definitely a barbecue, possibly a ball game on the radio and whatnot. Maybe even go to a ball game and then come home later and do the thing. And shit like that. I've never been in Sacramento for one, but I was in Sacramento years ago, speaking of the government. I was in the YMCA, this thing that the YMCA had in San Carlos, where I'm from in San Carlos, called Youth in Government. And what we were is, don't get up. This story appears to have no promise whatsoever. At the very outset, you said YMCA to start the story, and then you said Youth in Government as the subsequent sentence. What you have done expositionally is lead us into a cul-de-sac that we have no way to get out of without a bazooka, an entrenching tool, and a lightsaber to fucking fight our way toward entertainment, Greg. Please, Proop Kitten, please. Make this story fucking count. I'm with you. It requires a couple of sentences of setup, and then soon you'll find the rich rewards. This was the 70s in California, right? So people cared and they shared. And you could smoke inside, you could have sex without a condom, and everyone was thin. Yeah, it was different. If the phone rang and no one answered it, tough shit. This is what it was like to play music. Skin tight, skin tight. Bow, now, 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 now. Y'all real fine misses in them skin tight britches, driving folks into ditches. Skin tight. Skin tight. Bomb, 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 boom. Skin tight. Yeah, you knew where the skips were. And so we would go to this YMCA, which was over on the Belmont side of San Carlos, which, as you know, bad neighborhood. And yeah, Belmont, if there's a place whiter than San Carlos, it's Belmont. We at least had a Spanish name. They were Belmont. That means beautiful mountain. In white people talk. Over near Carlmont High School. See, like Arden Howe Mall. Carlmont, San Carlos, Belmont High School. I went to San Carlos High, which isn't there anymore. It's a bunch of condos. In any case, we would meet there. And this is what youth in government was. It was like we would be, there was little YMCA groups, I guess, all over the state and shit. And we would pretend to be like senators and assemblymen and all the posts and government judges and whatnot. And we would write a bill. Every group had to bring a bill. And then you'd try to pass your bill through the legislature. So when we would all get together and convene in Sacramento, and yes, we used the fucking corridors of power as depicted behind me here, just to describe it to the people living in England who have quit listening now while they're at their gym hoping something funny would happen and going, this isn't one of the best episodes I've heard. I'm going to skip forward. Behind me, depicted on the wall, is a Capitol Rotunda and a giant Grecian building of some renown that I've never seen in Sacramento. We do have a giant Capitol building here, but as you see in this picture, it's surrounded by trees and there are no homeless person barfing in front of it. So it has nothing to do with the actual reality of that part of Sacramento, which is indeed ropey, if not dicey. And in any case, you can imagine it in the 70s. When we used to come here in the 70s, it was like those, you know, awesome 70s films. It was just garbage fires and people with one eye and, road signs knocked over by human hands and shit like that. Just insane. Yeah, yeah, you know, fucking trolls living in luminescent pools of alkali. And it was flippy. So we would meet and we'd write a bill and you'd blah, blah, blah. And in those days, bills were like, I think ours was gun control that year. That was a big one. There was all these big issues in the 70s in California. The canal, right? We're going to build a canal to take all the water, the peripheral canal. So we went and we go. And the first year I was like, I think I was with the journalism wing or something. I was at the Fourth Estate, which meant that you could do whatever the fuck you wanted. That's why I took the gig. I didn't have to be an assemblyman. I didn't have to be a senator. I didn't have to attend meetings and shit. I was a layout artist on the fucking newspaper that we printed every day. Yes, that's right. There was no phones then. We had to fucking write a piece of paper and hand it to each other and shit. And I remember writing headlines and shit. And of course I did it. There was chicks. Half the journalism departments always was women, even in the 70s and the yearbook department. If you ever took journalism in high school or yearbook, was anyone on yearbook? Does anyone have the will to live that's left in this fucking room here? Yearbook was awesome because you could get high and then come back and take a T-square and go like this for like 2 hours and that was it. Or like an eyepiece and look at proof sheets and shit. Come here and look at this, man. This is a picture of a rally. What do you think of that? I think we should use this picture. And then the donut club, the key club, the chess club, every retarded club and shit. And of course, I don't know if you were like me, try to get your picture in every club, even if you weren't in them, just show up on picture day and, hey, buddy. I didn't know you were in the bowling club. Briefly. I did a short stint until I, you know, this finger. Whoa. I got Weber finger. I don't know what happened to my digits. It was crazy. I got Johnny Petraglia wrist, and I couldn't fucking lift anymore. That year, I went, and my group was super white. I'm from San Carlos, right? The whitest place on earth. And, yeah, exactly. Where Britney Spears is found in the funk section. Yeah, clunk. Screech, thud, rah, 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 ground boom flower, Piccolo Pete. I split. You know, I didn't have much duties. I wore like a coat and tie. I wasn't the guy who wore a coat and tie in high school. I dressed like everyone else in the 70s. I wore fucking overalls and earth shoes and had a t-shirt that said eat me on it and shit. You know, I was a fucking hair parted down the middle really long. Fucking heishi beads. Oh, yeah. Yeah, fuck you. Fuck you. Heishi beads. giant bell buckle with a mushroom on it and shit. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. With overalls? No. That was when you wore bell bottoms. But when we went there, I fucking put a little cut and tie on and shit. And then I adjourned and I met these two guys. I met a black guy from Long Beach named Daryl Long and a dude from Modesto, I think, named Artie Farkas. Unforgettable. So we went to their room over, I think, the Senator, and fucking got high as shit and looked out the window at this very scene, right? The giant Capitol Rotunda. And all the guys in my group were like, I can't believe you went off and fucking went with those guys from another. I'm like, I wanted to have fun while I was here because it was kind of oppressive. So the next year we go back. And now we're armed, right? And I'm going to be, I think I was a senator or an assemblyman or some fucking thing. And one of us was a judge, my buddy Tom and my buddy Leon and my buddy Bob. And they were like judges and senators. And we'd written this bill and we brought a ton of weed with us. The first night we're in our fucking room, just fucking blowing weed, right? And these two cats are in from another group, you know. And you know when fucking people are from another YMCA and they're from like the fucking, you know what I'm saying? I mean, some towns are going to be cool, right? If they're from, like, the La Jolla YMCA or whatever, you're like, whatever, douchebag. But if they're from Manteca and they're not going to be cool, right? Like, the Tuolumne one, you know, they're just glad to be, like, in a town and shit. And have, like, sinks and electricity or whatever. They're, you know, they're happy. So some fucking douchebag from some, I want to say from some fucking L.A., you know, like, tested, like, the Westminster, you know, Orange County fucking... His name was Dwight, and he had white hair. I don't remember your last name, Dwight, but I know you fucking turned me in 1977. So Dwight's in the room huffing with us, right? And he had white hair, not gray hair, not the elusive gray-haired high school guy who had gray hair. Like, there was a guy in my school named Scott. But, like, remember the gray-haired guy? There was the cancer guy. There was always the guy who had leukemia, and he died. And then they had a thing for him, and we had a rally, and they had a cardboard sign, and all the girls cried that day and shit. Except when it was my guy in my high school, they all wore toe socks and cried that day. It was the 70s. And clackers. Remember clackers? No, no one's old enough to remember fucking clackers. Anyways, this was the white-haired guy, and he had like a Bobby Goldsboro kind of page boy, you know, one of those horrible fucking 70s, you know, see the tree, how big it's grown, like, oh, fuck you, and, yeah, like a Debbie Boone, you know, you light up my, one of those, like, fucking Dorothy Hamill male cuts, like male figure skater hair. So... we're huffing, and then he fucks off with his little friend, his little weasel fucking friend. And I don't remember your fucking name. But you know who you are, Dwight's fucking friend. And they go down the hall. 5 minutes later, bam, 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 bam. Not this knock, not the I'm a stoner too, let me in, don't fucking draw it. But the fucking police, you know, the Goodfellas one, like he says in Goodfellas, we knew it wasn't fucking... You know, wise guys, because, yeah, you'd already be dead. Only cops make a lot of fucking noise. Bam, 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 open up. We know what's going on. Fucking Leon and me and Tom and Bob, fucking, somebody brought a pipe. We threw it out the window onto, like, M Street, is it? Out the window. I remember watching it topple to the ground. We took the weed and flushed it down the toilet, which I thought, even at the time, like, really? I'm never that panicky, but everybody freaked. So the door, we opened the door, and they go, look, we know you're smoking weed. We can smell it down the hall. And someone told us, and I was like, someone? I fucking know who it was. I don't know if you ever saw The Time Machine with Rod Taylor. But if you remember the Eloy, they were the white-haired people that were herded into cattle by the Morlocks who lived beneath the ground. Dwight was a fucking Eloy traitor. For a piece of fruit, I will tell you where the malcontents are. Youth in government, youth in government, Jesus loves my small little wiener. I'm afraid of anything different or bohemian imaginations. I will be a rigorous corporate drone the rest of my fucked up eunuch Viagra quaffing life. My unhappy children will resent me. Yeah, because you're a fucking narc, Dwight. That's what we called them in the 70s. You narked on me. To the Holsteins. Because their cars are black and white. 5-0 came later. The dude comes in. I forget his name, you know, Mr. Dickerson. I remember Dickley Dicklington. Wink Dickerton. Dink Slickerton. Tiny Dinkerton, I think was his name. Pruff, pruff, pruff. Creep a creep a creep a flu flu flu. Flang, flang. Well, I was with three other 17-year-old guys, and we were reasonably sharp 17-year-olds. And we started in, and one of us was a judge, by the way. Two senators, a judge, and an assemblyman. So, let me have the floor. I don't think you know what fucking stoner room you walked into here. This wasn't the fucking Santa Cruz YMCA. Where the dude who was a senator introduced a bill that hacky sack could be played on inclines. This was the fucking gun control San Carlos white people, bourgeois, well-read, fucking well-spoken contingent. So one after the next, we took the floor and gave impassioned Jimmy Stewart in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington filibusters. I just want to say, the government can't take away everything. We may be high, but I want you to know there's nobody in the program who loves this program more. And Tiny Dicklington was like, you know the rules. Rules are like orders that are rigid that adults make young people observe so that they have some feeling of superiority over them, even though they're completely threatened by their youth, vivaciousness, and free thought. We'd like to curtail any type of imagination while we're here being the government in light of the fact that the irony of smoking pot while occupying the fucking halls of power is but a pale glimmer of the chicanery, prostitution, fucking unbelievable lobbying, graft, malcontent, drug, and unbelievable conquest, fucking an oblivion drinking going on here in Sacramento every day. To make the simplest fucking decision about the simplest fucking canal that goes through Modesto. In any case, we argued for about an hour until he got sick of us talking. And that was what I couldn't stand about adults when I was a young person, was the fact that they weren't brooking any fucking dissent, right? Like, you'd go like, okay, we smoked pot. And I know there's a rule against smoking pot, but we're poor, pretty smart guys. And we have a fucking, I have a 10 a.m. tomorrow. I'm conducting a fucking Senate subcommittee tomorrow at 10 a.m. on gun control, Mr. Dinklington. Would it be all right if I fucking chaired that fucking meeting? Would that be okay and shit? Because I got to go over my notes before I retire. Well, rules are like a penis that enters you unmercifully when you're trying to exercise your freedom. The truth is, I bet if we'd had a beer and shit, they would have looked the other way. Right? Even then. And this was the 70s. So, we're banished. Our counselor, I think her name was Pat. She was so cool. She had blonde hair. I thought she was so old. She's probably like 27. You know, when you're 17, oh my God, I can't believe it. Oh, yeah. Oh. I'm 30. I used to say to people, do you have TV when you're little? Fuck you, you know, right? That's all right. I get mine back every day. You trust me, on the road. Man, I used to watch you when I was a little kid. Hey. We used to get the Hot Channel when I was 4. So, thank you. Only in Gaia allows with the Hot Channel reference. Taking you back to the day, Broham. Right here, right now. There is no other place I'd rather be. Watching the world wake up from history. Bum, 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 bum. I saw the decade end. Wild, wild west. Wild, wild west. Give me safe sex. Give me wild west. She's so mean, but I don't care. I love her eyes and her wild, wild hair. Dance to the beat that we love. So, when we were in this group, it was this is 77, so it's more like, I don't know, you know. Well, I'm getting a little, that's a little early. I was going to go, cold late night so long ago when I was not so strong, you know. But that's a little early for that. 77 might be like, I love you, create a papaya. The sound of the night that you do. Jungle love and the surf and the pouring rain. Everything but jungle love is driving me mad. Yeah. So, someone went, yeah. If you're young, I wouldn't be too fucking proud of the music that's going on right now, by the way. If you're gonna throw fucking Rihanna at me, I will fucking hit you back with Chaka Khan. So, I would think twice before renting an apartment on my dick area. You may want to look toward the outskirts of my dick before you start. What was that part you said about adults crushing all dissent? That was then. This is fucking now. When I'm tired and thinking low, I hide in my music, forget the day, and dream of a girl I used to know. I close my eyes and I'm... Yeah. That one played. Even more importantly, hey, once I was a boogie singer playing in a rock and roll band. I never had no problem running down them one night stand. Everything around me got to start to feeling so low. So I decided quickly. Yes, I did. That band was all white. Go on YouTube and watch Wild Cherry. It is fucking awesome. It is really awesome. They play white music like black music like white guys. It is really good. That was about then. So he puts us on a bus. Sacramento, 1976, maybe 77. 3 a.m. We go to the Sacramento bus station, the Greyhound bus station. He sent 4 teenage boys. They didn't take us there, by the way. We were sent there. We got in a taxi cab with our belongings. Yeah, right? So this whole pot is bad thing, I know something worse. Next thing I know, a guy with a green hat, this is the 70s, and a feather in it and shit is all up in my shit. All of a sudden, I'm turned out and I'm blowing guys for chicken and stuff. So keep your eye on the sparrow. Don't do the crime if you can't do the time. Don't do it. Oh, yeah. All of a sudden, my shit was out in the street. Yeah. So there we are at the bus station, and dejected, sitting there at 3:30 in the morning, waiting for the fucking daytime bus that's going to take us back to fucking San Francisco, where we're going to transfer to a local to go back to San Carlos to confront our parents who expect us to come home in 4 days' time. Because the year before, Jerry Brown, our current governor, and apparently governor emeritus, because when this story takes place, he was in his first term as governor, right after we had beaten the Japanese. And we went to see him speak at the end of the first one I did, and he came, and he was peremptory and terse. It was 1,000 kids in a room. And by the way, we had a chaplain and a governor and a lieutenant governor. The whole enchilada, the whole fucking legislature represented in California with teenagers. He got up in front of us, had one hand in his pocket, and people would go, Governor Brown, I have a question. You know, we had his microphone just like that. People would stand up one after the next. Very polite, young, well-spoken fucking young people in the 70s. Governor Brown, I have a question about the peripheral canal. And he'd go, your question has presupposed itself. I mean, by the time you've asked it, first of all, you haven't considered the budgetary constraints. I mean, that's how he was. It was like, you know, imagine a politician now. Imagine Mitt Romney at a meeting with a bunch of teenagers. Someone would go, Mr. Romney, who's better, Jesus or the Predator? And he'd go.
Let me answer that by saying this. I've always believed in the Predator. Though he came from another planet, his powers were not his own. His biological imperative overrode the mercy that we would normally expect from an alien being come to our world to hunt us.
Fucking Governor Brown shut us down. Shut us fucking down. And he was young then and sexy, right? I think he was dating Linda Ronstadt. He drove the Chrysler, lived in an apartment. It was fucking hot, right? And like this is when like Jimmy Carter got elected. He had the Eagles play at his inauguration and shit. This was right. Like you'd have coked up bands at your fucking show and shit. Yeah, it was the 70s. It was awesome. And yeah, Obama had that fucking asshole Jeremiah Wright speak at his inauguration. If he had had fucking, you know, whatever. Don't even. If he had had Chaka Khan and Etta James and shit like that, I would have liked it a lot more. You know what I'm saying? So in any case, Governor Brown shut us down. And I was talking to a guy before the show, and I thought, you know what? He was actually treating us beautifully. He was preparing us for adulthood because he was shutting us down by that we weren't knowing enough about every goddamn question that he already had written the fucking policy on. And he was like, you know, throwing shit back at us and whatnot. And I thought, that's how adults get treated. Not anymore because we're all illiterate assholes. But in those days, that's how adults got treated. And he was treating us like a body. He wasn't treating us like a bunch of fucking students in a room. He was treating us as if we were senators and assemblymen and shit like that. People will go, about this bill, whether than no. There's no way a bicameral house works. You know, you're like, what the fuck? Really? You're slapping us down and shit? I think he'd be nicer now. Then again, Jesuit training, right? Jesuit training. Give us the boy. I mean, he can argue his way out of a fucking... If you put him in a cardboard box, Jerry Brown would get the box to peel open by just fucking pure logic and reason and shit, right? There's a reason why the Jesuits say, give us the boy and we'll give you the man, right? Like... Pat Brown did one thing, and that was give Jerry training. So, in any case, we're in the bus station, 4 a.m. Now we're sitting there dejected on our fucking bench, right? I've got my red, white, and blue fucking newsboy cap on and shit. Come to the Honeycomb hideout. The Honeycomb kids are there. Right? I've got my Panasonic tuba loop. Thank you. This is just for the people from the 70s now.
But we don't remember these things, Greg.
I know. TVs in the chairs at the bus station that you put a quarter in that played shitty black and white TV that came in like Uruguay in the 40s and stuff. Today in the news. And a black dude with a big old hat comes up to us and goes, hey, man, y'all want to buy some weed? And we're like, no, man. We're all right. So we take the bus home. We have a big argument. We go back to the YMCA. It takes forever. We get back to the YMCA, and all three of the other cats go, my dad's going to beat the shit out of me, right? One cat we knew for sure, his dad would beat the shit out of him if he came home and went, I'm going to smoke weed. So they all decided that they were going to tell their weeds. They all weeded that they were going to decide that their dads were made of weed. What they decided when they drank was that they would weed when they decide. So their decision was to make weed when they told their dad. They all decided. We resided and presided and then decided. They decided they were going to tell their dads that they just got busted for drinking, right? And then the dads would go, okay, you're grounded till the end of time, but you get to live. And two dads, strict Catholics, one dad just kind of crazy. So, like we knew. And so I went home, and my dad was a mixed bag. Like everybody, every man in this room and every woman will agree, fathers are a mixed bag. You need them because otherwise you can't get born and shit. But by the other hand, on the other hand, there's times when you're like, if you could beat them to death with a wiffle ball bat, like in the morning when they get up, and then carry on doing that until July ends. You know what I'm saying? They're hard sometimes. Anyway, my dad was from Brooklyn and was a tough guy. And I think he'd done a lot of shit. I mean, I don't even think he told me all the shit he did. In fact, I'm certain that he didn't tell me all the shit he did. So I appear at the door at 10 a.m. and he's like, really? Aren't you supposed to be home on Monday? It is now Friday. And I go, come here, I want to talk to you about something. When we go in his room, and I go, and I can't, even before I spoke, he went, you got busted for smoking weed. Don't worry about it. I'll tell your mama it was beer. And then he drove me to Hillsdale Mall where I bought fog hat tickets. Slow ride, take it easy. Slow ride, easy. Yeah. I went that Saturday with my girlfriend Chrissy. Yeah, my dad was cool on that one, buddy. Sacramento. A lot of memories. I had a couple quotes here that I wanted to start the show with. But before we get started, I know you go on Amazon and buy shit. If you're going to go on Amazon, first go to my website, gregproops.com. There's a Mangrape banner there, is there not? It's on the right. The Amazon banner's there, too. It's a skyscraper banner. Those are the tall ones. You'll find King Kong at the top fighting a bunch of biplanes. It's an Amazon banner. Click on that. It's no extra fee or cost to you, and I get a small percentage, blah, 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 and you help support the show. Also, who doesn't like music? I don't, Greg. Really? You should, because then you could get Spotify. If you like music, not only can you get music, you can get all kinds of stuff on Spotify, comedy and all that kind of stuff. And what you do is you go to Facebook. What is Spotify? It's a new way to listen to music for free. Millions of tracks, artists, and comedy content, including the old Proop Kitten. This is how you use it. You go to Spotify link on our website. That would be gregproops.com. Click register from your Facebook account, presuming you have a Facebook account. If you don't, you're on your fucking own. Ah, there's nothing but the dry tortugas ahead of us. Tack into the wind, bosun! Aye, Captain, there's a Spanish vessel on the bottom. Is it a royal vessel or one of ours? I can't see yet, Captain. It's not flying the colors. Well, do we have a Facebook account, bosun? Aye, Captain. We'll be posting these party pictures later. Then download Spotify to your Windows or Mac and search and play millions of songs that are now yours. Doing it this way will give you free access to Spotify, and it's very, very simple. I could almost do it. We're going to be playing all over the world. We're here tonight, and then we're in the Helium Club in Philadelphia on the 12th of July, doing a Proopcast that night and a week of stand-up at Helium, a very nice place. There's also one in Portland, Oregon. I've never been to Philadelphia. I haven't been to Philadelphia. I've been to the airport in Philadelphia, and Philadelphia, as you know, means Philadelphia, city of brotherly love in Greek. If you've ever been to Philadelphia, no one particularly loving me. Not in a brotherly way. I've never had anyone go, hey, brother, I love you, and shit. This is what I remember about Philadelphia. I knew a friend in San Francisco named Joe Sharkey, and he was from Philly. And Joe smoked cigarettes, and he worked in the Bank of America basement with all Filipinos, and they counted checks and shit. And he had a mustache, and he wore a hat with the front turned up. And he said when the Beatles came out when he was a teenager in Philadelphia, all the guys in Philly thought they were queer. They liked soul music. Yeah. They thought the Beatles were faggots. That was Philadelphia's reaction to the Beatles and shit. Close your eyes and I'll kiss you. What a bunch of fucking fruits and shit. I guess you'd say. Then we'll be at the in Las Vegas, which is a lot like Sacramento, except what happens in Sacramento stays in Davis. I'll be at the Paris Hotel. That's the one that has a big Eiffel Tower. And, hilariously, the security guards at the Paris Hotel and Casino in Vegas dress as gendarmes. They wear little capes and have the little hats. And when you walk in, they go, bonjour. Bonjour, comment ça va? Ça va bien. Allez, mais d'abord, c'est le berrat. Mais ouais, ouais. Ni je n'ai regrette rien. Je ne regrette rien. And then on the 2nd at the Punchline in San Francisco, the sister club to this very club, we'll be doing a proopcast there, and then later on stand-up. I will be in Salem, Oregon on the 9th of August, and Eugene, Oregon on the 10th of August. Those are stand-up shows, so don't be disappointed. And you can always email me at smartestofthespecialthing.com. We answer questions on the email. We haven't done it in weeks, but goddammit, we're going to do it one day. I have so many interesting things to say. And also, if you email me directly, fanmail4greg@gmail.com, I answer your fucking mail. I don't mean your fucking mail. I go on it, and I read it, and I answer it. I do. I answer. And sometimes I read them on the air and shit like that. These are the quotes I wanted to get to, and then we're going to do one question from here, maybe, and then we're going to go to you guys. Bertrand Russell, who's a famous philosopher from the 20th century. I was thinking today about mediocrity in the world because I was at Los Angeles International Airport, which is the most disgusting thing man has ever made. But what about the slums of Calcutta? We saw Slumdog Millionaire. LAX is worse. I mean, in Calcutta, you know what you're dealing with. That's 5,000 years of that shit, right? We're talking a million years. LAX, there's urine on the floor. What are we, Paraguay in the 50s? Even in Paraguay, they're like, piso mojado. You know what I mean? Pull it together, LAX. And I was at the Chili's sitting at the bar because you couldn't get served any other way. In any case, a couple sits down next to me, and they're clearly in their 70s. They're old, and they're heading somewhere. Whatever, it's, you know, 4th of July weekend, whatnot. They want to buy a man, great. And there was dancing and singing and moving to the grooving, and just when it hit me, they're 70 years old, and they go like, we'll have a glass of white wine and whatnot. And the guy behind the bar goes, can I see your ID? And like, I know it's a rule, right? Like, I get it. It's a corporate rule. We ask everyone for their ID. There's a sign even probably somewhere in the fucking bar that says we ask everyone for their ID. But let me just introduce this concept into humanity at this late stage of 2012 in the 21st century. Common fucking sense. There is no reason when someone is clearly 70 years old and is wearing bifocal glasses and has a fucking aluminum stick with them to ask them for their identification. Your corporate rule does not outweigh me being a human. And I'm so fucking sick of it in this world that we live in. I mean, I realize it's a minor point and shit like that. And yes, I'm thrilled when I get asked for my ID, because the idea that you would think I'm under 21... But having said that, you know what I'm talking about. When you call someone on the phone to get help with something, they send you through a corporate thing and they read a script to you. When you go to a thing and appeal to someone, they read a corporate thing to you. When you go to someone and they're at the first level, the counter level, you know they can't help you at all, and it has to go 18 steps past them before someone can make a decision because they're given a sheet that says, do not make a decision. You are to hand this off to the other Schmendrick above you, and then that Schmendrick's to hand it off to the other Schmendrick above them until the Macha gets it, and then the Macha can't actually make a decision. Like, for instance, if you don't get your miles, your air miles, when you fly on a plane, this is a very Greg Proop specific problem. But if you fly, you know what I'm talking about. And you don't, like, tell them your mileage number before you fucking fly. When you're done, if you go, oh, fuck, I forgot to. I want to go online and, like, enter my mileage. Can I get the miles for that flight? Many airlines will say, mail us your boarding pass. Is there anything left in the world that you have to mail in to get the credit for? I don't even think cereal companies have you mail shit in anymore. I mean, no, I'm not going to mail my fucking boarding pass in. You have a computer. Let me type my fucking number in and use your vast fucking resources that you spend on advertising how great you are all the time, and then make me buy a $17 cardboard box full of garbage to eat when I'm on your fucking unclean 40-year-old ass plane that has razor blade disposal things in the bathroom and ashtray. Yeah, you fucking heard me. Your pilots are overworked. The crew is savagely fucking underpaid. They're fucked off and huffy. Everyone on the plane is in a bad fucking mood. You don't give out enough water. The air doesn't fucking work. The bathrooms smell like shit on your fucking planes. You've made me wait 2 hours in a giant security line where I can't bring fucking water through. I'm not mailing you the fucking boarding pass. I would rather chisel in marble my fucking frequent fucking flyer number and shove it up your ass when we're at the forum meeting Julius Caesar, okay? Are you fucking joking me? And then all the people that have ran for president this year, people like Herman Cain and shit like that, like that, no, you're mediocre. You're a mediocre person. Never mind that you're a mediocre candidate for president. You're embarrassing because the whole world saw you on debates and shit. In Germany and in wherever you can fucking think of, and in Malaysia, people were watching Herman Cain on a debate going, really? That's who they let run and shit like that. Rick Santorum. I think when two men's penises are rubbing together and sparks are flying out like a ground bloom flower. We had Bush as president for 8 years. We had his father. We had Reagan as president for 8 years. We've endured. We had George Duke Majan as governor of this state. We had Art Agnew. I mean, the mediocrity that we have to endure every day on a fucking global basis is beyond the pale of human comprehension. And this is what Bertrand Russell wrote. One of the painful things about our time is that those who feel certainty are stupid. Right? I love the Lord and shit like that. God told me to run. This is bad. This is good. And those with any imagination and understanding are filled with doubt and indecision. So, in other words, if you're a sentient being and you think, oh, well, this might be so, then you also might think, fucking, that might not be so. But if you're a fucking idiot, you go, well, I believe this. It's called Dunning-Kruger effect. Yes, they've done studies on it. The poorest performers are the least aware of their own incompetence. I'm not going to cite you every... It was from a PsyOps website my wife sent me today. They've done studies on this in every fucking field. And people who are completely incompetent and irrelevant and get shit wrong again and again never learn from their mistakes. How do you mean, Greg? All right. When I was a young child, we invaded a country called Vietnam. That lasted 8 years, cost untold lives, wiped out the fucking economy of the United States, and we ended up in a huge recession in debt to the fucking Arabs with that fucking oil embargo going on in the mid-70s. Later in my life, we invaded Afghanistan and Iraq, which has led to an 11-year war and then a 9-year war and leading us to a giant fucking war with the Arabs where we're fighting over gasoline until the end of fucking time and the United States economy's gone in the shitter. That's what I mean about not learning from your mistakes and the mediocrities that won the fucking world, and that there's no awareness of, like, Afghanistan was invaded by the Russians in 1980. By the end of the 90s, Russia was done, remember? Right here, right now. It wasn't Reagan's policies. It was Afghanistan. It drained them fucking dry. And they fucking had to fold because of it. And now they have elections and then the president cries because he got elected even though no one could vote if they pulled the handle with one hand that cut their other hand off and shit like that. That's what I'm talking about. Socrates said, the only true wisdom is to know you know nothing. And I think that's where we have to start on everything. But Greg, you're certainly spouting off a lot right now. I don't expect you to believe what I say. I expect you to think independently on your own and go to many different sources and then make a rational, logical, thought-out decision. I don't expect you to react immediately to some bullshit lie that you hear on the fucking news, because the news is full of nothing but lies. Nothing but lies. And there's no lie, as Noam Chomsky said, there's no lie big enough the New York Times won't put on the front page, right? And so that's what I mean. It's not that I want you to not believe everything and just be an utter cynic. I'm a cynic, but a cynics are failed romantics, right? We want to believe that the world is a pink butterfly swimming around a fucking pool of honey, and that one day we're all going to smoke weed together and our penises will elongate and form a chain. But I don't believe in cruelty, and I don't believe in violence, and I don't believe in misogyny. I think misogyny is the bane of the world. And I think hating the poor is akin to misogyny, as I've said so often on the show. And the Supreme Court decided this week to uphold Obamacare. Now, I already talked about it on a podcast that you won't hear because it'll come out actually while we're doing this one. But in any case, Paul Krugman, who is a writer for the New York Times and refused to be in the Obama administration, he's a very eminent economist. I was saying something about it 2 days ago in Minneapolis, and he said a few things that I agreed with. So I thought I'd back that shit up and read something he said. So the law that the Supreme Court upheld is an act of human decency that is also fiscally responsible. It's not perfect by a long shot. It is, after all, originally a Republican plan devised long ago in a way to forestall the obvious alternative of extending Medicare to cover everyone. But what was and what is really striking about the anti-reformers, the ones who don't want health care, is their cruelty. And that's what I was saying a couple of days ago on the podcast. What I despise most of all about the Supreme Court, what I despise about people's stances and shit, is when they're cruel. To be against health care, you can say that it's taxing without representation. You can say that it's going to fucking cost us money down the line, da-da-da-da-da-da. There's 30 million people without health care. A lot of them are children. A lot of them are women. So I'm supposed to kick that fucking bottle out of that baby's hand and go, hey, you snot-nosed fucking diphtheria-laden fucking infant, crawl your way over a field of glass into a pool of bullshit. Because I'm rich and white and privileged and I get whatever I fucking want, whenever I fucking want it. But I'm not letting you have any because Big Pharma doesn't make enough money every year. That's what cruelty is. Would be one thing if they'd offered any hint of an alternative proposal to help Americans with pre-existing conditions, blah, blah, blah. But it has long been obvious that the opposition's goal is simply to kill reform. Never mind the human consequences. We should be thankful that, for the moment at least, that effort's failed. And I kind of agree with him about that. What I think about was so remarkable about the Supreme Court upholding the Obamacare ruling, aside from the fact that I like John Roberts for the first time in my life. I know that I'm reiterating this, and by the time you hear it, it'll be reiterated yet again. The point is, and this is Paul Krugman, it isn't over, not on healthcare, not on the broader shape of American society. The cruelty and ruthlessness that made this court decision such a nail-biter aren't going away. We're forever rooting out the poor and the immigrants and those who are taking everything away from us. And why do we have to spend our money on other people and shit like that? And yet, at the same time, you see all the money funneling immediately to the top. And that's where I think the cruelty comes in. And that's what I think is the most un-American thing at this 4th of July when we're out there with our man-grates. The most un-American thing about America is to be cruel. Because if there's one thing that's cool about America, it's when people move here from any country, like my relatives did, like your relatives did. My relatives came from England and from Eastern Europe or Germany or whatnot, when it wasn't Germany, when it was like Czech or whatever. They came over and they didn't speak English, right? My great-grandparents spoke Yiddish, German, right? Everyone came over on a boat. And that's what I fucking hate is when it's like, well, when people come over and try to take jobs. Shut the fuck up and grow up and get over it and shit. The reason why America is awesome in any way, if there's a reason why America is awesome, is that once you get here, you're American. Right? In other countries you go, and it's not that way. I lived in England for years. I was always an American when I was there. I didn't want to be an English person. I wanted to keep my identity. I wanted to retain it. But they don't let you. You're an honorary English person. But in America, you really are an American, right? Arnold Schwarzenegger was governor of this state for 8 fucking years. Yeah, we're in Sacramento. You know what that fucking means. But that's how awesome our system can be. Really? That a right-wing coup perpetrated by Daryl Issa and a bunch of millionaires, created a putsch which allowed him to recall a governor who was legitimately elected and then slide his way in an election that had 300 people on the ballot, so it was so confusing that only the most recognizable person was voted for? Yeah, that's what I mean. We're fluid that way. Let's take some questions and then we'll go off into the night. How about that? Does anyone want to pitch up and ask a question here? I always promise that we'll answer the ones on the email, and goddammit, one day we will. But holy kittens, let's have a question. Yes, sir, what's your name, sir?
Hello, Maestro. My name is Nick.
Hi, Nick.
Hi. As you know, the city of Stockton, California recently declared bankruptcy. And I was curious, if the city council came to you for advice, what would you tell them?
I know. Stockton went belly up. Well, I'm not certain at the outset, because being an economist, first of all, the question he asked, I've been asked to repeat them. Someone tweeted me today. Sometimes it doesn't come out on the audio. He asked, the city of Stockton just went bankrupt, which it did, which is a city here in California, right here in the valley, about an hour and a half from San Francisco. And or I don't know how far it is from you guys. Hour? Hour. Very raisiny, but not as raisiny as Fresno. What would my advice be to them? My advice would be, wow. How do you let a municipality go fucking belly up? What are you doing with those fucking taxes? First of all, you have to reorganize from the very top all the way fucking down. Whatever remuneration you're receiving from the public in terms of all the taxes that are paid as city taxes, first of all, the first place I would look would be all the giant corporations that are operating in and around Stockton and the agribusiness outside and inside Stockton. Those would be the first people I would go to see if they were paying their fair fucking share. Secondly, I think there's a lot of places you could probably start cutting things. Thirdly, I hope I can count on your vote in November. And I thank you. Is that it? We only have one question? Because we can go. Oh, no, there's another person. Hi, what's your name, sir?
My name's Randy.
Hi, Randy. I'm Greg.
You must be Randy.
A lot like now, I think. Rome was a system of patronage, the likes of which had never been fucking explored. When people ran for a council in Rome, and then sometimes there was two councils, right? Often there was. And then later, they were handed out by the emperor. And by the time Caesar became consul, he was just proscribing years in advance who was going to be the consul for the next year. Two guys held the post for 1 year at a time. Well, those people had to give millions of sesterces out to the people and give out doles of grain and whatnot every time. When Caesar got into power, that's how he did it. He really laid it on with the fucking public. Augustus, when he took power, took a gigantic loan out before he even fucking fought for primacy in Rome, before he formed the triumvirate with Lepidus and fucking Mark Antony, and just gave money to people in the streets. Like, people would line up and here's fucking 10 coins of fucking gold and here's a bunch of grain and corn and shit like that. And that's what we've got going on now. The difference is they used to give it to people. And now they give it to giant corporations, and giant corporations give it back to them. The reason why it costs $1 billion is that we're not involved anymore. Am I wrong or am I wrong? And I think if ancient Rome existed now, it would be exactly the way it is. They would use their fucking magisterial power, their auctoritas, in order to fucking make everyone submit. And there would be this one ruling elite class, which there always was in Rome, which, by the way, they did it right. No women, and they had slaves. see what I did? I snoodled you from the snoodlers. It's more than a feeling when I hear that old song play. That's what I think. I think we have ancient Rome now. Otherwise, why would you have people like Dick Cheney and Karl Rove, who are like the Sejanus and Caligulas of, you know what I mean? They seem untrammeled in their power. They seem to have no ego other than this wild hubris. They seem to be motivated only by greed. There's no sense of the public good. We were complaining what happened to the Republic, just like they did in Rome 2,000 years ago. So I kind of feel like There's a horrible, hideous, apt analogy. Probably more like the Middle Ages, though, because feudalism really works the way we work right now, right? Like, we all work on a fucking serfdom farm, and you should be happy for the fucking 2 turnips I gave you at the end, and I got to fuck your daughter. But when the army time comes to fucking everybody gets killed, then I want you on the front line with a fucking longbow and shit like that before you get hit in the head with a rock that's fired by a French ballista. So, if that doesn't make it too clear for everyone... Thank you for your question, and I hope I can count on your vote in November. Two more, and then we'll fuck off. No women? Oh, there's one. All right. Oh, your wife. What? And you went ahead of her. What a gentleman. Chivalry. Ah, it's dead. It's dead. Yes, sir. What's your name?
Hi, Aaron.
Hi, Aaron. What an interesting name. My name's Hello Greg. Understood.
I've got a would you rather question.
Oh, that's so male. Go on. Men's questions on the show are always, who's better, Deep Purple or Lynyrd Skynyrd? Or, would you rather have a hot poker shoved inside an orifice of your body, or to have Salma Hayek slathered in lemon jello laying supine upon a mat that you might enter her? I'll take my question off the air. Men are so comparison-oriented. I never realized it till I started this show. Go on.
Well, you took my hot poker question, so I'll do the other one.
All right. Well done. Well done. Touché.
Would you rather be fabulously rich robber baron 150 years ago or be middle class today?
Well, I mean, I am middle class today, so, you know, that answers that fucking question. I would have liked to have been a robber baron because I adore turtle soup and wearing a silk hat. And since this is Sacramento, I'd like to be like a Frank Norris robber baron, completely unscrupulous, fucking driving railroads through Indian land and abusing Mexicans and whatnot, and then sweating profusely from my upper lip during a huge groaning board full of oysters and fucking various fowl and fish served by fucking subservient Irish maids and whatnot, and have a giant hacienda that I repair to on the weekend where braceros and vaqueros perform fucking feats on horseback for my and my white wife's amusement. There's certain advantages to being a robber baron, especially in California 150 years ago. You can have New York. All they did was go to Europe and plunder every antiquity from Egypt. The California robber barons did it right. They established Stanford and oppression. That's been our show. This is the Smartest Man in the World, Proofcast. Thank you very much for coming out tonight. You've been a lovely crowd. My name's been Greg Proops. I'm sorry we didn't get to everyone. I adore you, and may every page that you turn into a satchel page. My name's Greg Proops. Nick, if you will, and good night.